Warning, this show may be highly arousing and distracting. Listener discretion advised.
Get ready to get titillated while being educated. Join the Queen of Fetish as I lead you into the world of sexuality while exploring outer limits of fetish, BDSM, and the sex trade industry. I'm your host, Wicked Ashlyn. On this episode, we're going to discuss exotic humiliation play. We will touch on themes of consensual humiliation and mild embarrassment. It's important for you to know that this is a safe and judgment-free space where all participants are consensual adults age 18 or older. We all experience moments of humiliation, some more intensely than others. Can humiliation be a source of unexpected pleasure or empowerment? Today on Wicked Ashlyn Podcast, we are joined by Dom Athos, author of the Deeper Kink series, to gain insights into this fascinating kink. Athos isn't afraid to explore the complex psychological aspect of humiliation. Well, let's start off with the first, what I think is the main question. What is humiliation kink?
Humiliation kink to me is first and foremost a subcategory of, and I like this term, I didn't create it, mental and emotional sadomasochism. I like that term because it relates the experience of humiliation from both the dom and the sub side to something that is maybe a little more familiar to people in the area of physical pain or pain play. Specifically, the notion of mental and emotional sadomasochism means you're playing rather than like with physical nerve-ending pain, you're playing with mental or emotional pain. And in the case of humiliation in particular, at least in my personal opinion, you're playing with the emotions of shame and embarrassment, which is a bit different from other forms of mental and emotional sadomasochism, like what you might call degradation play, where you're playing with emotions that are more like worthlessness. Those are some, maybe cutting some fine hairs, but I think that to me gets into the essence of what humiliation kink is.
And how did you find out that you like humiliation kink?
Yeah, so my journey into BDSM in general as a young man was through erotic reading. This was back in the days when the internet was slow and I was too impatient for pictures to load. And I've always been a reader. And so when I found erotica, I preferred to get my porn through the written word since it was faster and easier at the time. And I'm a reader anyway. And I found myself gravitating really quickly toward BDSM stories in general, and specifically stories involving humiliation, especially within the context of a long-term relationship. As I thought about it afterward over many years, I've come to realize how much that method of getting into BDSM influenced my preferences and the way that I play, because humiliation and psychological BDSM in general hinges a lot upon the idea of a story that you're telling together. The dom and sub together are telling a story that is about the emotions that are evoked. And I'm sure we're going to get into this a bit more, but that is really necessary for this type of play to really work, in my opinion, at least.
I do agree with you on that. Why does humiliation turn some people on?
Yeah, so I think that's why I really like the notion of mental and emotional sadomasochism, because you could ask the same question. Why does pain turn some people on? Why does roughness turn some people on? My personal opinion, I get to this a little bit in my book, is what turns us on comes from really deep within our unconscious mind, what the psychologist Jung called the shadow. And down there, we have all of our politically incorrect emotions, the stuff that society doesn't like very much, our lust and our rage and our desire to dominate and our desire to shame and be shamed and all of that. That roiling mass of unspoken, unacknowledged desire is what Jung called the psychological shadow. And that is the source of our lust and our libido. And so I think when you really go down there and start tapping into it, I think very often what you come up with is sort of linkages between those deep emotions, the desire to fuck and the desire to hurt and the desire to surrender and the desire to control. And just like lust itself, those desires are not socially acceptable, but they're the drivers of some of our most powerful and intimate experiences. And intimacy in particular, I think, is important because intimacy hinges on the notion of seeing and being seen, including our shadow, our entire self. And when we are truly seen as ourselves, when we acknowledge who we really are and let someone else see that, often there are those uncomfortable desires, like the desire to hurt and the desire to humiliate, but those get linked up with our general libido and lust. I think that's where it comes from.
I always talk about how communication is very important in a relationship. How do you approach partners, or how do you recommend our listeners approach partners to let them know that you're into the kink, or just to bring it up?
A lot of it depends on the context. I mean, this is a mental and emotional thing, right? So the context matters. If I'm talking to a new partner, I gauge like, what is her experience level? And you know, I say her, by the way, and same thing I frame in my book, like I'm speaking from my own experience. So it's male dom, hetero, like that's my experience. So don't mean to be exclusive at all, but it depends on my experience of her or my perception of her experience and comfort with it. If she's pretty experienced or she seems pretty comfortable, then I'll just ask like, are you into humiliation play? And what does that mean to you? And I kind of start there. With someone who isn't as familiar, or maybe is more hesitant, or I don't really know, or I'm worried, you know, longer term relationship when I was younger and just getting into this myself, or just acknowledging it to myself, I talk about myself rather than asking about her. It's a little safer for the person to just hear, hey, I'm sharing myself with you. And so I take on that vulnerability and I say, hey, what really turns me on is doing things that make you blush, either during or afterward. And I really kind of get off on making you do things that make you feel a little shy or make you think, oh my God, I can't believe I did that afterward. Those two explanations of blushing and thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. For me, I think that captures something close enough to the center of humiliation play for me that I'm able to engage whether this is an appealing thing to that person, that notion of like feeling that blush as a turn on. And then we can start talking about, well, what things would make you feel that? What would make you blush? What would make you think, oh my God, I can't believe you did that? And yet would not be harmful to you if we played around. So that's how I start the conversation.
That's some really good advice. Thank you. Is there anything to consider before engaging in humiliation play?
I do feel a bit strongly about this. I know I don't think this is a universal value, but it's important to me. And that is, you are playing with someone's mind and emotions. And so I feel it's important to frame my humiliation play in a way that does not break that person down outside of the play. At best, actually builds them up outside the scene. So I'll give you an example. Like, let's say negotiate with my partner and she's turned on by the idea of being called dumb or being called a dumb slut, right? Humiliated on an intelligence basis. And maybe she's turned on by that for whatever reason, down in the depths of her unconscious, that idea of being called dumb is tied to their libido and whatever mishmash of unconscious impulses there is. But I would not be comfortable just saying, oh, you're a dumb slut. That to me leaves her with questions after the scene is over about, wait, did you really think that? Would you really think I'm dumb? To me, I like to play in a way where that's really not a question in their mind. So I try to build my language into something that creates a different frame. And so I try to use the frame, just an example here, continuing the dumb example, the frame of being turned on as the thing that is reducing her intelligence, right? So I say, oh, you're so wet and so horny that smart little brain is dripping out between your legs and making you act like a dumb little slut for me. That framing, and there's 1,000 variations of the wording, so the details aren't important, but it indicates, I think you're smart, but I'm also getting into this place where I'm gonna play with you as being dumb within the context of lust and sex. And because that's the entry, it also provides an exit after the scene is over, where her ego and self-worth is not really in question. And now other people, I think, play differently. For me, what I consider to be important in a scene, I think very carefully about what the potential impact is on my partner so that she is able to frame that in a positive way. And after the scene, it's interesting is what she hears is, oh, I think you're smart. And yet we're able to play with these notions within the scene. And so the way I frame that to myself is just like if you're doing impact play, you need to know how to hit your partner safely without injuring them. You need to know their anatomy and you need to know the mechanics of how to strike accurately with whatever implement you're using. And so for exploring humiliation play, you need to know their mental anatomy just as you know their physical anatomy before engaging with this.
I'm glad you said that because, yeah, that's something that I feel is very important is you don't want them to take what you said during a session and believe it after the session. So the way you word it, the way you use your words, I think is perfect. And I hope our listeners are listening to that and pick up on it because the way you use your words during any type of session is very important. So it's something that they do have to consider.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you're talking about something as intimate as this, both people are being really vulnerable. I talked about, you know, you're showing what's really down in your shadows and your unconscious, not the socially polite front that we put on. So there's a tremendous amount of vulnerability you're leaving hanging out there. And I feel like some people are comfortable playing without that level of detail and then dealing with it in aftercare, reassuring that, hey, I don't really think that about you or whatever. For me, I think it's important to build it in. But regardless, it is a very verbal kink because you are dealing with these kinds of intimate things. So yeah, being able to talk is a really big thing to consider about this, about what you feel, about what you want to feel and why, and all of those things.
Definitely. Now, do you have any tips for safely exploring humiliation kink?
Talking, being able to speak effectively, knowing self-knowledge, I think is really critical. I think that's one of the biggest aspects. What do I want my partner to feel? Why? What excites me about that? So that self-knowledge and articulation, I think, is one of the more important parts because you're now playing with the details of your own psyche and your partner's psyche. It is not just physical anymore. So talking and tuning in is really critical to understanding their mental anatomy. I mean, if a submissive partner comes and says, oh, you know, I'm really turned on by the idea of you making me kiss your feet and that turned me on. Okay, well, the question is why? What emotion did you feel? Was it embarrassment there? Like, what's the emotion that's separate from the specific fantasy so I can get to know your real inner self? The second thing I would say, this is a bit difficult to teach, but I think you really do have to develop empathy, the ability to tune into your partner and feel what they're feeling to the degree that that's possible. I think that's important even for physical play. You know, BDSM, you're pushing on the edges of where pain and pleasure merge and where the end is. And especially for this sort of psychological play, you can't be half in and half out. You really have to be tuned in.
Definitely. Now, Damien is working on a special podcast, so he is having me ask all my guests this. Has sex ever sent you or a partner to the hospital?
No, thankfully not.
You know, he watches those shows on TV of funny stories of ways you get sent to the hospital with sex, so he's trying to work on a special podcast for that.
thankfully so far I have escaped such.
Awesome. I know, because it'd be really embarrassing.
The flip side is, you know, the ER seen it all. Oh, yes. So it's just another Tuesday to them.
Now, how can our listeners find out more about humiliation kink?
We touched on this before, but again, this is out of my own bias, my own experience, but I really do encourage reading erotic stories because it gets you into the frame of not just appreciating hot physical bodies, but appreciating the hotness of a story, the psychology of what's going on. So I love Literotica, give them a shout out, but there's a ton of erotic sites, and use kind of a search function, use a humiliation tag or humiliation search. You can tack on whatever other tags you want, but do some reading on highly rated stories that feature humiliation and use that post-nut clarity, right? Use a story, get off, that's great. And then after you've gotten off, do some introspection and say, okay, what turned me on about that? Why was that so exciting? The second thing, if people want to learn more, I mean, I am writing a book on this, so I'll throw that out to the listeners. It's called Reflections in the Mirror of Kink, People Who Want a Sex Life Like LSD, Not Chardonnay. The first volume, which I'm publishing chapter by chapter on Substack, I'll put the link in the show notes, is about the philosophy and psychology of kink in general, and psychological kink in particular. So I talk about Jung, I talk about the psychological shadow, all of this stuff. I talk about some of the common gender archetypes that I think we're playing with. The father archetype is the wise king archetype, which has the shadow of the tyrant and the weakling, and those play into our psychological experience of kink. Volume 2, which we'll get to, again, I'm putting it out chapter by chapter, is practical implementations, and volume 3 is kind of nitty-gritty tips and tricks. That's the only part that's behind a paywall because it's more smutty than the rest. But yeah, if people are interested in diving into of the psychology of this, they can check that out on Substack.
Awesome. I know I'll be looking into checking it out.
Awesome.
I noticed you mentioned a website, Literotica.
Yep.
I will be honest, I've gone on there several times.
Sure.
One thing I do want to point out, those are amateurs. So sometimes the stuff that they may write, you may not fully want to listen to. So definitely do your research. But it's definitely a good site to go on to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, click away if it's going in a direction you find concerning. It depends on your search criteria as well, but yeah, definitely feel free to click away from anything that's not your bag.
Definitely. Before we go, is there anything else our listeners should know about humiliation?
No, I think we covered a fair bit of it here. Yeah, no, I think we covered the core of it.
Okay. The world of kink, as Athos in the Deeper Kink series shows us, is about going deeper into emotions, power dynamics, and our own vulnerabilities. This kind of exploration can be powerful and fulfilling, but it's essential that it's always rooted in clear communication and consent. If any part of this conversation with Athos sparked questions or curiosity for you, I encourage you to explore further within a safe and supportive environment. Read the Deeper Kink series or look for resources and communities focused on safe and ethical humiliation play. There's power in understanding your own deepest desires. And of course, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I actually learned a lot from you, and I'm hoping our listeners did too. And I'll definitely be looking into your series and reading on it, because anything I can learn, I love and I enjoy. So thank you.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Hopefully we can bring you back in and you can talk more about your book, your series, and we can learn more from you down the road.
Absolutely. Anytime. Look forward to it.
Thank you so much. And as always, if you'd like to learn more about me as a mistress, visit wickedashlyn.com. There you can find the kinks and fetishes I support, how to call me, the games we can play together, and my favorite part, the ways you can spoil me. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And of course, as always, keep wicked.